With your permission, we'd like to talk shop for just a moment.
Because we've got a good racket going, you're not going to be able to touch our own.
Oh, okay, so you've got a racket going.
Cookies are not the only food. I tell that to my children all the time.
It's time for the Publisher Podcast. It's time for the Publisher Podcast.
Here's a man that really appreciates that new England pound.
Hi, how's it going, and welcome to the Video Week podcast. My name is Vincent Flood, I'm the Editor-in-Chief at Video Week, and in this episode I'm speaking to Keith Bedford, who is General Manager for EMEA at Wurl. Wurl are one of the companies that provide the infrastructure for CTV distribution and monetization, spanning everything from acquiring and retaining viewers right through to ad targeting. We discuss what Wurl is, the company's relationship with their owners at AppLovin. AppLovin is very much the darling of the public markets, and yeah, I think it's coming up to a quarter of a trillion in value. We also discuss the FAST market, how Keith sees it evolving in the future, the difference between the US and European markets, content discoverability, still very much a big ongoing issue in CTV. We talk about the SME opportunity, and the CTV operating system land grab. In terms of stuff coming up from us, we've got TV Rise, my personal favorite of all our events, coming up. That's taking place in Lisbon this year, and it goes from October 21st to 23rd. Then on November 13th, we have Video Week Roadmap in London, which is shaping up to be a fantastic event. We've got many of the big power players on stage. We've got the commercial and advertising chiefs from Netflix, Deliveroo, ITV, Sky, Havas, Channel 4, and many others. If you'd like to be involved in either of those, you can get in touch via the Video Week website or check out the event websites. Now, I'll cross over to my conversation with Keith, and I hope you enjoy. So, Keith, welcome to the podcast.
Yeah, thanks, Vincent. I've been looking forward to this for quite a while now, so looking forward to having a good chat with you.
So, one of the things we dig into is, you know, how people got to where they are today. So, I'm curious about how you know, what was your beachhead into the industry? And I'm curious about your career before you joined Wurl. So, where did it all begin?
Well, you know, I've had a great and exciting career, actually, and I feel very humbled to have be part of Wurl now. But early days, I started off in marketing and ended up being quite entrepreneurial and starting up a few businesses that some worked, some didn't. I think we had a clothing business originally, but then I started building early websites. So, you know, I was, you know, heavily involved in web design before the web was invented and during and then after. So that sort of turned into a software business. I did various projects and then ended up at a company called EBS New Media, which I was a shareholder in, and we were building all sorts of products within broadcast. So that was my sort of introduction into the broadcast world. And we had lots of products. We had a playout system, we had compliance recording, we had metadata systems. And I think in the end, we had to pick one of those, and we ended up in metadata. And that was an introduction into, you know, working with some of the big broadcasters. We ended up with contracts with sort of Turner, BBC, ITV, and then eventually that business got sold into the Press Association, which is now PA Media, and I did 3 years with them and then left and ended up in the sort of consultancy world for a short while before selling into Wurl, and eventually I got a job with Wurl, and I've been here 2.5 years, so it's been a great journey, and you know, lots of my career has been in broadcast, you know, 25 years plus. And I think in traditional broadcast as well. So, you know, seeing the and being part of the sort of change and watching how streaming's grown has been, you know, a massive part of my journey. And the advertising side, obviously, huge now. And, you know, 2 years at Wurl, I've learned a lot. And I say I've been very lucky to be part of what's happening right now in CTV.
Yeah, actually, just as you were saying that, it's something I hear so often, you know, that people have sort of come over from the broadcast world. And even if they're working on in the new generation of companies, they have that broadcast heritage, which I think is, I think it's good for them in that they, you know, I think understanding where something is coming from is always hugely useful, where, you know, if you understand, you know, how ads used to be traded in digital, you can understand the logic for why programmatic is going to work or anything else. And I think it's the same thing in TV where it stands you in good stead. Don't want to take for granted that people know who Wurl are. I mean, I think it's a name that most people will have seen around, certainly for the last few years, but the company's evolved quite a bit, sort of brought out new types of technology and offerings. So, you know, what is Wurl?
Yeah, no, I think, going back to your point about how broadcast has evolved, when obviously, you know, Wurl were a company that was set up purely for streaming channels. And, you know, early days at Wurl, and still what we're doing now is, you know, working with content owners to provide streams into CTV platforms, you know, such as Samsung, LG, you know, Roku, everybody really, you know, every significant platform we're connected into. So, you know, I think for me, you know, learning that original, how we were distributing over satellite and, you know, the natural progression is into connected television. You know, everybody's, you know, the way the market's gone now, all the products that are launching, you're just plugging in and streaming everything. So, you know, that then opens up the opportunity for a whole different way of advertising, which, you know, Wurl have connected into. So, you know, first off, they were building channels for content companies. That we launched the first channel with Samsung, you know, right back in 2016, I believe. And, you know, from there, we've just grown that channel business and worked with major companies in that market, you know, CNN and A&E, AMC, et cetera. So, you know, and I think it's really important that we know about that content. You know, we know how it's scheduled. We know, you know, the breaks. We know what's doing well. We can see across the board what content's working well and very much, you know, part of the strategy was, you know, we need to understand what the user wants to watch, and that whole engagement around, you know, what the viewers watching is going to help us build an ad product. And the early days of the ad product, which is called AdPool, was based on, you know, just helping our content companies, you know, make more money out of the FAST business. So, and that's, you know, just grown. And that's, you know, as we talked about before, you know, Wurl, not so well known in the ad market, but obviously, you know, the last 2 years we've been really concentrating on that market and growing our name and reputation in that area. So, you know, it's been a good evolvement. Obviously there was an acquisition by AppLovin back in 2022. So, you know, and that's, you know, really elevated our business and given us a chance to build some new tech and, you know, look at the marketplace and really, you know, build that ad business out.
Yeah, I mean, and the AppLovin acquisition, we should dig into that a little bit. AppLovin, for I think most people will know, but it's very much the darling of the publicly traded ad tech markets. I think market cap is sort of just shy of 150 billion at the time of recording. How would you describe Wurl's relationship with AppLovin? You know, is it a hands-on or hands-off relationship? And
yeah, you know, it's a bit of both. I think the relationship with AppLovin is excellent. You know, pretty much they know we understand, you know, the CTV market. They know we understand the publishers. They know we understand the platform. So they pretty much let us get on with it. And, you know, we know what their incentive is. We know what they want to build. You know, as you said, you know, they are the darlings right now, and they're doing a fantastic job in advertising. Obviously started off in sort of predominantly sort of gaming, doing performance marketing, help the gaming businesses grow their user base, help them serve advertising, very much a performance marketing led model. And I think, you know, they've utilized AI so well to drive that performance marketing model within mobile. And obviously then there's a natural expansion to look at what other areas they can do, whether that's within, you know, website publishing, whether that's within e-commerce, and obviously CTV comes part of that. So, you know, we know what we're, you know, we're looking at what they're building, and we're trying to adapt and build the market ready for some of their products to come on board. So it's a good relationship. You know, they let us get on with it because I think they know we understand that CTV market.
I'm curious about, you know, at Wurl, I think you get a very well, I assume you get a very interesting, you know, insight into what's happening, you know, right across the CTV ecosystem. I mean, I'm curious, how much of that data do you get back and are you allowed to use, or to what extent it's maybe controlled by clients or other players in the industry, because you know you're so exposed to various different apps across the ecosystem and service.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's you know, different to depend on what platform and what partner we work with. I think, you know, ultimately, if we're looking at what we're doing for the channel business, you know, our goal is to try and help them maximize their viewership. So using data to, you know, work out what programs have been doing well in certain areas, in certain territories is obviously key. And we have a good data portal that, you know, when it comes to advertising, you know, there are some restrictions from certain platforms and what's shared, but, you know, we understand that, you know, they're building their own ad, you know, they're putting the investment into their platforms to drive revenue. So, you know, we still work with them, and it's all about working with both the content partner and the streamer to build that out. But data is obviously key to a lot of growth. And, you know, I think the industry, you know, I've just come, but, you know, we weren't that long at MIP, Cannes Lions. I'm going to MIP, sorry. And, you know, the talk there is about, you know, how we grow the industry. We're going to need to start sharing data sets. You know, there's so much more data available within streaming. You know, and I think of my linear days and, you know, how we were recording viewership, you know, it is so different now. And that information is there. There's just going to be need to a little bit more collaboration. I'm sure we can touch on that later. But, you know, data is obviously key. You know, we share good data back with our, you know, our channels and platforms. And likewise, we share as much data as we can with the ad platform. So, but, there, you know, there's still room for growth there. And I think we're all working towards that.
And I'm curious about, you know, how would you compare World's experience in the US versus Europe? I think the US was very much a dream market for CTV growth, monolingual, hugely wealthy, massive scaled economy. But yeah.
Well, that's a tough one when you're the GM of Europe. Yeah.
Yeah. I tried to explain it. Yes, back.
I spent a fair amount of my time, you know, educating. I mean, obviously, they know, but, you know, the difference between US and Europe is quite huge. There is obviously great growth within the US. I mean, you know, if I look at, you know, what's happened in the US, there's definitely been a cord cutting going on. You know, there's been, you know, lack of subscription growth within traditional TV markets, and you know, direct to consumer is massive. So yes, I mean, I think the availability to touch devices there is huge. I mean, I think last count it was over 350 million potential devices on TV we could target. So I think, you know, that is a huge market. And, you know, it's, you know, less complex, as you say, as around languaging for sure. And it's a single market, so it's, you know, it's easy to target. So obviously, when I compare it to Europe, there's a number of, you know, challenges, or actually what I see is growth. The US market in the ad market has obviously grown no end. And I think the future, you know, stats on that is looking great. Europe is obviously a bit slower, but in fairness, there's a few more challenges there. If I look at some of the major sort of big five, if I take Germany and UK, for instance, public service broadcasters still have a good foothold in the market. So, you know, obviously we pay a license fee here. We get BBC, ITV, Channel 4, Channel 5, which is free. So, you know, there's no real cord cutting needed if you're watching it through, you know, a TV set that's free view, for instance. But obviously where we might see the difference is, you know, is the Sky potential subscription base going to drop? You know, who knows? But, you know, I think that is going to start changing. I think that is going to open up, you know, more streaming television. And I think, you know, the challenge is there for us is, you know, how do we be multilingual? You know, how do we, you know, there's probably 26 potential languages within Europe that we might have to translate into. There's obviously then a different ad market in each country, in each territory, which could have complications as well. But I think that's one of the challenges. And I do feel, if I look at growth in Germany this year, it's been fantastic. Certainly from the amount of big brands launching channels, and the ad market has grown as well. So I think, you know, Germany's done so well this year, and there's, you know, there's been some changes in legislation on, you know, how you can actually view TV. I think if you were in a flat block before that, you had to take that service, and I think that's been dropped. So you can, it's an open market now for streaming. So I definitely see it's going to grow. You know, the difference in revenue is obviously quite large at the moment, but you know, it will grow, and we are seeing that growth.
Yeah, I'm reminded of a conversation I had with a regional broadcaster that worked across Europe, and I was saying, you know, how do you, you know, unite these very disparate, you know, broadcasters into one company? He said the very first thing is to accept the limitations of being able to do that, and you accept the French are French, the Germans are German, the Italians are Italian, and they will all want to do things their own way, you know, or have their own local nuances. So it's a complicated market, but I think it's made all the more interesting for that very reason as well, but probably challenging for people like you in EMEA roles.
I think challenging in the fact that, you know, obviously our US team want to see growth quicker always. You know, that's definitely one of the challenges, but it is happening. But I do feel, you know, we're a company, you know, my team do travel a lot. We do like to do deals in person. So, you know, very much attending a lot of the sort of, you know, MIPCOMs and MIPTVs and Sportels and everything. So, you know, we're very good at making sure we're getting in front of the right people. And I think that's so important to be able to do business in other territories. And, you know, I think one of the things in Germany has been because we've done well at building relationships in that area. It's so key. You know, and technology is there now to make things like translation and subtitling everything a lot easier. So we're only going to embrace that technology to make it easier. And, you know, there's lots of things we could, you know, start doing around AI to make that process and complex a lot easier. So I think that's a great place to be. You're not only, you know, are we challenged in trying to grow the ad market? We want to make it easier for our broadcasters to put content in lots of territories, you know, using technology. So again, another part of my challenge, but it's good.
Yeah, I think Netflix have very much validated the fact that you can have, you know, content in one language and have it be a huge hit. You know, Squid Game being the obvious one that comes to mind, but there's various examples. And it's not like they're the only ones who do it. It's certainly been something that succeeded in Europe before, but I think it's a bit of a myth that things have to be completely localized every time as well. I'm curious about your views on the world is the backbone for many fast services, or certainly fast channels. How is that market evolving?
Yeah, I mean, if I compare the two again, I think if I look at what's happened in the US, you know, I'm definitely seeing the growth of, you know, larger brands putting their, you know, maybe even first window content out on fast. You know, I am seeing, and we are seeing a shift of, you know, some of the big businesses. If I take A&E, I mean, they're you know, they're building more fast channels. They're distributing into more countries. They're putting first window content out in some territories. So, you know, I'm definitely seeing the shift in the US, and it's coming to Europe. So I think if you look at, you know, the amount of channels that are on some of the platforms, they're still growing. But I do think some of the tier ones are also growing and distributing channels within fast. I mean, you know, BBC have had fast channels outside of the UK for many years, and ITV the same. So there's definitely, you know, an appetite for tier one broadcasters to get their content out on streaming. So, you know, I think that's the change I'm seeing, and I think that's going to continue for sure. I think just on the top of that, you know, adding on the different markets, we are seeing a growth in sports, which is, you know, a bit of a surprise. And I think there's a lot of sports companies that are looking at direct to consumer acquisition. You know, it's a, you know, everywhere's a brand. You've got to keep your brand in many different places. And, you know, lots of these sports companies have got good archives. They've got potentially great live events that they might not sell the rights to, that they might do well on streaming, and we're definitely seeing a growth in the sports market, and that's been a good area of growth for us in Europe as well, looking at working with some of the major sports brands. So and sports is normally an untouched market in that it's normally subscription only. It's what's driving big subscribers to the big platforms, and you know, they are all looking at strategies to help them go direct to consumers. So interesting place there as well.
Does FAST have a discoverability problem? You know, I think a lot of people, maybe they buy their smart TV, maybe you get a 24-hour window of them, you know, adding their channels, and they're in that, you know, adding channels section. Yeah. But yeah, I'm curious, do people actually even realize that these things exist sometimes?
Well, I think it's a great point, and I think, you know, from a personal point of view, when I speak to people outside the industry, there are sometimes, and you know, don't even know what I'm talking about, of course. And then some people don't even realize they've got an extra 300 channels that don't cost them anything. So I do think that's a problem. I think that, you know, obviously when we change over to streaming and you know, maybe you know, DTH and satellite become less, we have to find our programs. I definitely agree there's, you know, it's hard for the consumer to find their content. There's a couple of things there. There's the, you know, the fact that, you know, we all talk about what we want to watch, and it could be on Amazon, it could be on Netflix, it could be on TV. It's very hard to find it and where it is. And I think the device manufacturers and the Samsungs, the LGs of the world are really working at their home screen. And I think that is such an important area. You know, we really need to make the consumption of content as easy as possible. You know, we need to have a single place of where we get in, maybe sort of cut down the amount of apps. You know, it's very difficult. Universal search is key. And using, you know, great technology like short form to drive the consumer habits and send them to the content platforms and the right viewers. So, yeah, I think it's very difficult. And I think there's, you know, obviously a lot of, you know, streaming wars going on as far as an OS wars, and you know, who's gonna build the best OS. But you know, I think there's so much improvement in that area coming. I think, you know, at some point it will be a lot easier for the consumer to find their content. You know, certainly if we look at what's happening in the UK, Freely is an interesting proposition. Obviously that's run by you know, the BBC, ITV, Channel 4, Channel 5 collaboration with Viacom, I believe. And, you know, that's opening up streaming on device. I think they launched with Hisense last year on their Hisense televisions. There's a Freely button on the remote. It's got all of the PSB channels there, which you can view. And there's also an opportunity to see FAST channels. And if that grows, that will obviously change the market a fair bit, because basically all of your linear broadcasting channels could be in one place. But, you know, all of the people are working towards that, you know, the Samsungs, the LGs, and let's not mention some of the big fives like Google. But it's an interesting place. I agree with you. It's got to be almost mum-proof is my word. If your mum can operate the TV and make it easy to find stuff, I think we're there.
Yeah, it's... Yeah, my own mother, yeah. we have a training session every time.
Yeah, how do you find this?
She arrives. Well, we're a CTV-only household, as you'd expect from the editor of Video
Week. Absolutely.
But she always gets the hang of it in the end, but finds it frustrating that you can't just flick between channels. And when Freely launched, I mean, I was just like, yeah, we need this. You know, I know, and I feel like the other FAST channels equally could be part of a, you know, some sort of a unified app, and just have something that people can rediscover flicking through channels. You know, we've returned to linear in a weird way since having a baby and in our house, and I'm sort of rediscovering the joy of it. So I wouldn't rule linear out completely, and I feel like it's about having it front and center, making it a little bit easier as a user experience for channel hopping, and having it more discoverable in the within the operating systems.
Yeah, totally agree. And I think, you know, it's interesting, you know, talking about your baby and you're watching more linear. I think, you know, TV in a way is generational. There is major differences in that. You know, if I look at my sort of household, you know, my youngsters are watching YouTube a lot, and they're watching short form, and you know, they you know, they might watch sports every now and again, but you know, they've got a completely different viewing experience to us. I think when you're You know, when you have children and you just literally need to sit in front of the TV and have something served to you, obviously that's where linear comes in. And, you know, and then, you know, I get to a point now where sometimes I'm searching for what to watch. And, you know, I know there's some good content there, but I don't know where to watch it. And I think, you know, the average viewership on trying to find something to watch is about 8 minutes, I believe. So, you know, you think about all that time you're actually spending to try and find something to watch when there's lots of content. It's certainly something that, you know, we're all looking at, you know, ways of, you know, helping viewers find the right content. It's key also to the ad market. You know, it's, you know, things like, you know, the new streaming platforms that come out have all got to use this in order to, you know, help with advertising. It's, you know, a big part of where the industry needs to go.
Yeah. It's, I do feel as well with the short form content. Jonah Peretti, the CEO of BuzzFeed, I mean, I think he's planning a new social platform and is quite keen to be slating the other competition. But he used a term that I can't remember, but it was something about the feeling of being kind of slightly malnourished after an evening flicking through short form social videos. And you might have laughed a few times, you know, but there's something that you just, at the end, it's just not a very satisfying experience if you spent the evening doing it. And yeah, and I do wonder if it's just a question of, yes, we're all, you know, well, many people are certainly hooked on that type of content, but ultimately, is it something that, you know, we're all going to realize, like smoking, that it's not what we should be doing?
No, I couldn't agree more. I think, you know, I did have TikTok for a very small patch, and I think I've lost hours there. I mean, you know, what have I really achieved? And I think we've got to be very careful not to allow that to happen in TV. I do feel short form is a product that can help drive a decision process, but, you know, you're spending all nights on YouTube Shorts. So, you know, it's not. You probably look at the end of the night, I think that wasn't that engaging. So I think, yeah, I feel you're right. And I think that will change. And, you know, it is almost like a drug, isn't it? You get stuck on short form. But, you know, there's got to be an outcome, and it's got to be driving long form, I think, is the key to the market going forward.
Yeah. I found myself with TikTok. I get up to make a coffee and find myself standing in the kitchen 30 minutes later, and I realize, okay, this is not is not for me.
And I allow myself Instagram, and I sometimes do that as well. I think, you know, where did I just lose half an hour? So
yeah, very, very easily done. I'm not on Instagram, but my other half shares a video, and then yeah, I find myself in this loop on the web app. What would you say? I'm curious about, you know, the potential for growth and FAST, and that you've got a lot of new entrants. Often they'll have maybe a video library, and often a deep video library that they've been, you know, publishing online as a online news publisher or a newspaper group, for example. But yeah, you know, what do you think are the number one pitfalls people make when they're setting up a FAST channel?
Well, I think I could mention a good and a bad example there. I think there's a lot of, you know, broadcasters or content owners that are launching FAST channels and not doing any marketing at all. And I think in this multi-platform world that we live in, I think it's absolutely essential. And I do feel there isn't enough marketing sometimes when there's some, you know, major brands launch channels, and I follow them on, you know, some of the social media platforms. I don't even know they've launched the FAST channel. And so I think there's some, you know, I think there's a lot more that everybody could be doing as far as cross-platform promotion. I think, you know, I don't think many of us would want to launch a business without doing any marketing. So I do think there's some thought there. I mean, what you mentioned a minute ago as well, I mean, Lad Bible, great example of a business that's, you know, grown through social media platforms, and only this week have launched the channel on Samsung. And I've looked at their marketing, and it's everywhere. They've even got billboard advertisements in London. So, you know, they're really going for that marketing, and I hope they're a success. So, you know, I think that, but that's a, you know, that's a realization of where it's come the other way. They're not a traditional broadcaster. You know, they've built up their business from social media, and now they're launching TV channels. So, and Vice are a company that did the same. They went that way. So, you know, I think it's interesting, but as I say, you have to do marketing as a side to make it successful, and, you know, because there's so much competition. You know, there's so many channels, like we mentioned before, so you need to stand out. And in another, a client of ours, Z, they're one of the best, you know, largest channels within Europe, and they're doing very well in Germany, but they've done the shift on their marketing. You know, they've really promoted it on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and everywhere else. So, you know, cross-platform marketing, I think, is absolutely key to this world.
Is that Z as in CTV?
It's an Asian network showing yes. content. They've done very well, and you know, they've got a very good marketing strategy. And I think, you know, that's a very niche content, but you know, it's getting good viewership across the board. And so, you know, I think they're an example where if you can launch a fast channel and market it properly, it can work.
Yes, my other half is from an Indian family, and ZTV is very much a staple, and will be on all day, every day.
Well, exactly. Please let her do it, because it will help us all.
it very much is. In fact, yeah, because we had somebody from ZTV come along to an event earlier in the year, and there was a lot of excitement where, you know, she said, "Did you tell him that we used to like get in the car and drive to our cousin's house so that we could watch it?"
I go back years with Z as well, and when I was in my broadcast days. Run a teletext service for them. So, I mean, you can just see, I'm maybe giving my age away now, which is pretty bad, that I used to run a teletext service, but I at the time, teletext was fantastic. You know, it was before web pages. So, and I run a Z server for many, many, many years on their teletext service. And I think it was running on a 486 computer that we never turned off because we would never get it back to work again. So, thankfully it lasted the whole length of the service. But so I go back a long way with Z, and, you know, and it's great to see a company changing with the times and, you know, launching streaming channels and doing marketing around it and being successful. So it's a good example.
Yeah, it seems like a very progressive company as well in terms of the international expansion as
Absolutely.
Well. We've touched on operating systems a few times now, but I'm curious about, you know, how much space there is for so many, because, you know, we're seeing multiple new entrants, but at the same time, I think sometimes people have applied the logic of desktop and mobile and assume the same thing is going to play out in TV. For example, you know, if you're using a Windows PC in an office, it probably makes sense that other people are as well. You know, probably less so nowadays in the days of cloud software, but it certainly did. And there was very much a reason for everything to be standardized and everything to be running on the same thing. Whereas, you know, do you think that there's room for all of these operating systems to continue, or will we see a lot of consolidation in the future? And I'm curious about what you think is driving people to go and, you know, set up, you know, yet another TV operating system.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I think that, you know, if I look at some of the new entrants in the market, they are already sort of building a model with advertising in mind. And I think if you look at, you know, the progression of the OEMs and how they built their services, is that, you know, back in the day it was a TV war, who can sell the cheapest flat screen television in bulk and sell as many as you can, and obviously that model's completely changed. And I still don't think a TV is a consumable item, but, you know, I think that, you know, the decision process when you go and buy a TV, they should be promoting the options on what the OS can do for you. And, you know, going back to sort of finding the right content and having search engine, et cetera. So I think they're all growing. I think they're all working towards the same goal. Is there too many? Well, you know, I think that's a consumer question in a way. I think you're always going to, you know, Samsung are not going to want to, you know, potentially have a different OS on their system. They're going to stick with theirs and just make it better. Same with LG. Obviously, when you look at the new entrants like Titan, they are selling onto different manufacturers' devices. So they are a sort of standalone device that are doing deals with the OS and OEMs to get their OS on there. But yeah, they're all ultimately now need to work out, you know, how they can maximize the amount of revenue through ads, which is obviously great for companies like us working with them on the platform side as well. But it's a challenge for sure. I mean, I haven't bought a TV in a shop for a long time, but, you know, I know some of the new OSs are doing deals with some of the, you know, the sales houses around, you know, selling TVs and ultimately trying to work together, which is, you know, a great idea. So, but, you know, that decision process is needs to be made easier. And then I also think the consumer needs to know, you know, more about what's available on those sets, as such as what channels they can get. So it's a big challenge, big challenge.
Yeah, I'm curious about the extent to which the CTV operating system is a differentiator for consumers, or is it just primarily about, can I get my core apps?
Yeah, I don't know if it is right now. It's a funny one, isn't it? Because, you know, you go into a John Lewis and potentially look at buying a TV set, and are you just looking for the best picture and the best quality? You know, is the OS coming into consideration? And I probably think that's where advertising and targeting people for the next device is crucial. So, you know, I think there's lots of things now you need to make a decision when buying a TV. I mean, my last TV purchase was a Hisense because I wanted to see freely. You know, and I think it's only because I'm inside the marketplace that I wanted to do that. Who would know about that outside of it? So, you know, marketing again for these organizations is key.
Yeah, it's well, we're a Roku household, mainly because I've been given free Roku stuff and seen no reason to change it. But it's very good. It's great. It does everything that it needs to do. And they're also getting some free advertising here for setting me up with that.
Exactly. And I think I don't really want to go over all of my subscriptions, but I've got far too many, you know, and I've still got subscription TV. So, you know, I haven't actually moved to completely free television yet, but in other rooms I have. So, you know, it's just I need to consolidate at some point, but it is still quite a minefield.
I think everyone has their consolidation to-do list that never really comes around.
Yeah, I think subscriptions, I think in the US, I think it was up to about 6 subscriptions on average per household. I mean, if you think about that, that's crazy. On average per household. So, you know, if you're looking at 6 subscriptions, that's quite mad really, isn't it?
I think it's quite hard when you're hooked in on the next season of a show or whatever else, you're often waiting. Once the next season of that is finished, I'll do it, and then by then they've you know announced something else, and you can or you've started watching something else. So, much of the industry has been excited this year about the prospect of growing the SME advertiser market. SME is a it kind of brings lots of different types of companies to mind, from a sort of corner shop right through to maybe a company turning over 9-10 million. I can't remember what the ceiling is for an SME, but I think it's higher than some people might think, you know, or even mid-sized companies who aren't necessarily advertising on TV today. And I'm curious about you know your view on that opportunity generally, and the extent to which we're seeing that happening today.
Well, I mean, I believe that's a massive growth area, and we should all be thinking about that. And if I look at it from two angles, if I look at it from what AppLoving are building, that they are building the ability for SMEs to place advertising, target, and get return. So, you know, that is definitely a future, and they're building that now on mobile and web. So, you know, if I look at TV, you know, that is a must. And if you look at, you know, who you're really competing with in the TV market, it is, you know, Facebook, Instagrams, Googles, which, and, you know, and there's a lot of savvy people work within small businesses and large businesses that can easily place advertising, you know, can easily target who they want to try and reach with their advertising campaigns and get attribution. So that is, you know, the key for us all working in this common goal to be able to do that. And I think, you know, there is an opportunity to open up a self-serve platform for SMEs to drive marketing. Because, you know, if you want to make it easy for advertisers and the advertising process to be as easy as possible. And, you know, it is quite difficult in CTV for an SME to place an ad. And, you know, I think so you're going to place it on Google or Instagram and because you can do it and it's easy. So we that is something the industry needs to work towards. And I do feel, you know, it would be lovely to be able to obviously help the corporations grow, but it also be lovely to help the small businesses grow and grow their reach. And, you know, if there's, you know, a niche product, why shouldn't they be able to target it on TV? There's enough channels, there's enough niche content. And I think that is definitely something that I think we should all be working towards.
Yeah, I mean, I can think, you know, generative AI, you know, lowering the cost of creative is part of what's driving, you know, the growth in that sort of part of the market where, you know, you don't no longer need a, you know, just drop tens of thousands on creative. But
I think coming from the creative world, like that sort of does hurt a bit as well. I still feel there's a, you know, a human intervention needed in creativity. And I think AI can obviously do lots and it can do so much, but I still think there's room to get the creative rights with, you know, creative people looking at how that outcome actually happens and what is the overall campaign target and what is the overall you know, achievement you want to get from that campaign. And an AI can do a lot, but I still think there's a room for creative in this industry. It should be used.
And I think it'll always be a massive differentiator between the best companies and the worst. I think, there's certainly a lot of AI slop sort of going around the internet at the moment. If you look at my LinkedIn feed,
Well, I think, you know, it's a challenge. I know we working in this industry, we all want to keep on top of that. And it's grown so quickly, I think, I don't know, were we talking about AI 5 years ago? Probably not. So you think about, you know, how quick that adoption's happened. It's been very, very quickly, and there's been lots of success. But, you know, it's like anything, you have to put the right data in for the right outcome. And I still think there's, you know, it can obviously build strategies, but I still think there's room for us to all come up with strategies and try and keep up with the market. I mean, I suppose that's one of the good and bad things. You know, I love the fact that we're still in a marketplace, and I'm working in a marketplace that is ever evolving. And I think it's so important for, you know, all of us, and especially at World, we need to make sure we're always adapting and doing the best that we can to try and get technology to work for our clients. So it's a great problem.
Yeah, I think we had an AI session, I think it was about 7 or 8 years ago.
And I don't know what I was doing after those 5 years then.
No, but I mean, the reason I'm mentioning it is not to be, you know, some smug visionary, but I can remember on the feedback, the event feedback, somebody was complaining that it was irrelevant. And
I've heard that in certain, you know, in the past. And, you know, I think that's the danger of any industry that's in transition, is that, you know, we've got to make sure we don't keep, you know, talking about the past. I mean, you know, I'm happy to talk about my linear days, but, you know, I'm thinking forward, and change is happening, and it's quite exciting to be part of it.
I'm just curious, and you know, we've just spoken about Gen AI and SMEs. I mean, jumping over to the sell side, you know, is there any signs that we're seeing a new breed of, you know, say animation studios wanted to create their own apps, now that, you know, maybe a sort of team of 18-year-olds have gotten together and they've realized that they can put together, you know, some shows? I mean, I think YouTube is probably seeing a certain amount of that now, but I'm curious as if there's any early inklings and whether that's happening in TV yet.
No, I haven't really seen anybody producing content in that manner per se in the CTV market. I sort of, in a way, hope it doesn't happen, but I think there's lots of, you know, benefits of AI for content, and I think it's probably around, you know, potentially, you know, languaging and lip syncing and subtitling. Nothing worse than, you know, watching a show with a really bad lip sync that someone's overput a different language on. I think it's probably the worst, but so I think there's definitely there. I think there's certainly creative for advertising, you know, small blocks of advertising coming from AI for sure. You know, I've got a number of friends in the TV industry, and I think that's they're all dreading that in a way. And in a way, I hope it does stay more humanized. I think there's, you know, AI is going to, you know, for us as well, you know, around scheduling, you know, there's so many decisions to schedule a good channel at the right time, in the right content, the right certification, you know, the right type of content for the right person. And I think obviously AI is going to help us, you know, achieve better outcomes there. So there's definitely some good tools that we're building around AI that's going to help, you know, build the user experience. But I'm yet to see any content yet.
So looking ahead to 2026, what do you think is going to be the big issue in CTV advertising for next year?
Now, I think, you know, what we talked about at Cannes Lions was, you know, more collaboration needed. I mean, you know, obviously, if you look at all the different options on TV, you know, everybody's trying to, you know, there's a bit of a walled garden going on in a lot of places. And I think there's definitely room for more collaboration. And I, we probably hear this, you know, throughout every industry, but I think it's quite crucial. And, you know, if we're really going to make CTV advertising easy, there's definitely got to be more collaboration. And it's got to be easy for advertisers to place that advert and to get the right data back to make sure they're getting the right outcomes. And I think that is, and that's going to be key for the future. When you're not going to be able to compete with, you know, the web and app based, you know, advertising if you don't do that within TV. So I definitely feel that's something. And I held a sort of a round table, a sort of, you know, an event at Cannes Lions, and it was, you know, closed off, and everybody had the same opinion. It's about making sure we can collaborate and share data. And obviously you need to hold on to some crucial data to grow your walled garden. But I also think there's room for collaboration. And I think it will happen. But when it will, who knows?
Yeah, I think there's always an early period where everybody wants to own everything. It's very understandable. You know, it's quite hard to relinquish control over what, and maybe you've got a competitive edge over one or another. But I think that people can see the vision of that the collaboration will lead to all boats rising.
Exactly. I think the main agencies, you know, want to push that as well. They want to make it easy for them to place, you know, advertising, and they also want to, you know, get some good data back on the outcome. And if it's, you know, fragmented on that journey, they're going to place it somewhere else.
You've given me some food for thought for what we should be talking about at TV Rise this year, and
I looked at the dates, and you know, I'll wait for my invite.
be in the post. You should have received. you might even be sponsoring. I can't remember. Anyway, let's crack on before I go off checking websites. So, final concluding question: I give 10 million to everyone to invest, and I'm curious about where you would invest and why. It can be a company, it can be a sector.
I think I'm gonna really just emphasize the point I was taking. I think if I had 10 million right now to invest, it would definitely be around attribution, definitely be around outcomes, you know, making it easier for SMEs to place advertising and get an outcome and drive a sale. I mean, ultimately, you know, most advertising has an outcome, you know, either promoting a brand or getting a sale. And I think I would invest in a company that's going to do that. You know, it might well be us. If I had 10 million, maybe I'd invest it. But, you know, I think there's lots of different companies looking to try and do this. I'd definitely invest it in that sector.
Yeah, you're not the first to give that answer. I think it's a massive headache for so many people in terms of justifying the spend, but then also to do it in a way that the attribution is fair. And I think that with TV particularly, it's often difficult to quantify the brand relationship that might have been built up over a decade, and that translating into a sale. So I think that how you disentangle that, maybe smarter people than I know how to do this, but how you disentangle that from the transaction rather than ending up in a place where, you know, like the sort of last view attribution model, which was, you know, a fairly atrocious state of affairs with online display, last view or last click. And it was, simply somebody often taking credit for when the legwork was actually done by the repeated TV.
Well, that's right. It's very difficult because if you see an advert on TV and go and Google it, the click comes from Google because they found the website. So, you know, it's going to be a great problem to solve.
Well, Keith, that was a very enjoyable chat. It's been a while since I recorded a podcast. Apologies to the audience for anyone who has been eagerly waiting for a new episode. I apologise to both of you. But it's been a real pleasure.
No, excellent. I look forward to seeing you in Portugal.
Yes, look forward to that. All right. Cheers, Keith.
Thank you, Vincent.